Frank, Hayes, and JJ.
Hit it!
It's time for The Frangie Show on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Every day we give you a new drug. I want a new drug.
Yeah, drugs are good.
I love Huey Lewis.
I mean, as long as he, you know. We're
I love Huey Lewis, and I love legal drugs.
Legal, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right?
Absolutely.
Legal drugs. Only legal drugs around here, JJ La Selva, out of Ocala Central. Only legal drugs.
No comment.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're with us on this Thursday. Our Thursdays are always brought to you by our friends at Stanley Pools. Always a Stanley Pools Thursday around here. The best pool builders in town since 1988. They've been doing that, and we certainly do appreciate that. All right, we are loaded up today. Now, it's a busy show today. In about 10 minutes or so, my friend Lee Smith will join us from the Players' Championship. He is our golf analyst. I can't wait to ask him about the latest Scottie Scheffler show, because that's what it is. It's a Scottie Scheffler show left and right these days. And, I mean, it's amazing, and we'll talk to him about that. The amazing thing about it, too, Hayes, and we talked about it all week, is this guy's hard – adversity doesn't affect him. Yeah, I think that's the thing. I don't think he's going down as the world's greatest shot maker. What he's going down, we always say golf's about your misses, right? Golf, manage your misses and consistency and steadiness. Gosh, he's about as good as we've had at that in a long time. So I look forward to Lee, who really knows the world of golf better than us, probably as good a golf analyst we ever had around here. So I'm excited to have Lee in here. Comes in about 12 minutes or 15 minutes. He'll be in right at 4:15. Got a Duval County Scholar Athlete today. That's at the bottom of the hour. Pete Prisco today at 5 o'clock. Pete was tied up tomorrow. Typically, he does Fridays with us, but he was tied up tomorrow, so it'll be today at 5 o'clock. So some NFL talk with Pete. And then maybe the news of the day. We were down at the presser today. Trent Baalke, Doug Peterson spoke. And you know what? They can't say much, obviously. But I thought some stuff came out of there, and we're going to play you some of those comments from both of those guys in the 4:30 stretch after our Duval County Scholar Athlete comes in, because we're going to start with a little golf in a minute. But let's really start the program with football. What did you take out of it? Because I thought there was some meat in that presser.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it kind of did away with the thought, in my opinion, that they're going to make some massive trade up the board. We talked about, do they try to get to 6 to get either Harrison or Neighbors, or maybe 9 to get a Dunze, something like that? That's been a talking point, and it didn't seem like it. It seems like if they do think about moving up, they're going to wait until at least 11 players have been selected, if not more so. So it doesn't seem like they're very interested in giving up a 25 first rounder, which I totally understand. What you would obviously have to give up to go from 17 to 12 is going to be much smaller prize. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. I don't think they're going to trade up. I do think moving back is a strong possibility if they find the partner.
Trent must have said 3 or 4 times today, yeah, well, let's see where we are, and then let's see what it would take to get up to 12 or 13 or wherever. He said it enough times that either A, he's a great poker player, and he was sending the message that they may do that, or that might be what they're doing. I agree with you. You don't get the impression that he was thinking top 10, at least based on his comments today. So, but yeah, I would not be surprised to see you go up to 12 or 13, because just based on his comments. What did you make of the answer to the Trevor Lawrence extension question?
Yeah, I was surprised, because I thought that deal, I figured it would get done. They were very adamant throughout, the year and even at the end of the year of, we believe Trevor Lawrence is our guy, and that. So I think the plan has always been to get that extension done this offseason, the first one that they can. And recent trend in around the league with like Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, those massive deals has been to do it really close to the opener, where you almost have already broken training camp, you've played your final preseason game, and you've got that like 10-day window before the season starts. That's kind of been the sweet spot. But to hear Trent Baalke talk about it and Trevor a couple days ago, it seems like they're probably further along than what I would have expected. I mean, for Trent Baalke to make the comment that ownership is involved, and certainly there have been multiple talks with Trevor's camp.
As recently as last night.
As recently as last night. So, yeah, it does – it makes you wonder, okay, well, what would be – there's no salary cap difference. Whether they get the deal done in a week or in the next week or whether they get the deal done in late August, it's not going to affect this year's capital. So that's not really really anything that would change the equation. What it does make me wonder is there something to them adding a veteran like a Brandon Ayuk through a trade where now you've got to do the Ayuk deal, but you've already done the Trevor deal.
Right.
So you've got the Josh Allen deal done. You've got the Trevor deal done. You know what those figures are going to look like in future years, which might help them as they do another big deal.
Right.
And I think it makes sense to, if you're going to, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but just hypothetically, if you're going to trade for a player from another team and pay them big money, you want to make sure that your core guys have been taken care of.
Yeah,
so you would have done the Josh Allen deal, you'd do the Trevor Lawrence deal. And frankly, everybody else I think has to play well. Tyson Campbell, obviously Walker Little, Andre Sisko, go have a big year, and then we'll talk about what your contract looks like.
The other thing I took from there, and it's not breaking news, but it's confirmation of expectations. Let me say it that way. It's clear he said they're a 4-3 team now. He said. Trent said there's some change schematic. They both talked about schematic changes. Trent said, you know, one thing, we're a 40 front, not a 30 front now. Now, we all assume that, but that's big news when it's confirmed. That now means that Trayvon Walker, I think, will be even better than he's ever been because we all know he's better with his hand on the ground. Well, 4-3, I assume, means Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker are your ends.
Right.
They're no longer linebackers. So the mix in between Armstead and Devon Hamilton and Roy Robertson Harris and whoever else, they'll be the tackles. But now Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen will be called ends. They will be little ends with their hand on the ground. So instead of a 3-4 where those guys are both outside linebackers, and I always thought they were an odd fit, and I said that from the get-go, well, now I think they both play the very natural position, which is rush end. Those edges will be ends now. So you now have Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker as ends in a 4-3 defense, and he said it. I mean, again, it's no longer conjecture, even though that's kind of what we all thought. And that changes your linebacker scheme, and Trent offered it today. He said one of the things we had to do, talk about conversations with Ryan Nielsen, is we now have to find a Sam linebacker internally. Remember now, they didn't have a true Sam. When you're in a 4, they called it a Sam, but when you're in a 3-4, you've got two inside linebackers and two outside linebackers who more often than not are edge guys, right? Well, in a 4-3, you have two ends, two tackles, and now you really have a nose in and a 3 technique, but for the sake of the conversation, two ends and two tackles, a middle linebacker and two outside linebackers, but hey, that means a Micah Will and a Sam. The Sam is the strong side guy that's more likely to play closer to the line of scrimmage in a lot of formations and will play on the side of the linebacker, the tight end. So assuming Foye Oluokun remains he's now the middle linebacker. And he was always called a Mike, but now he's really a middle linebacker in a 4-3. What do they do with the other spot? Devin Lloyd has been the weak side linebacker. Does he stay at weak side and now Chad Mumma becomes a starter at the Sam? So then it would be Oluokun, Lloyd, and Mumma. Or does Mumma become the weak side linebacker, which is more of an inside position, and Devin Lloyd goes over there to the Sam? That's the second option. Or does Ventrell Miller get in the mix? Now, he wouldn't be a Sam, but is he the weak side linebacker? So he plays next to Foye Oluokun, and Devin Lloyd goes and plays the Sam. You see my point?
Oh, yeah.
Those are all very interesting options. Oluokun, I'm pretty sure, is the middle linebacker, and a middle linebacker in a 4-3. And I know you're a nickel most of the time, so that doesn't come into play. But for the sake of who they are, if he's the middle linebacker, is it Lloyd and Mumma? And Lloyd stays where he was and Mumma plays the Sam? What's your guess? Give me a guess on how they will do that.
I think it'll be Oluokun, Lloyd, Mumma will be the linebackers.
And Mumma will be the Sam,
yes.
like the play on the tight end side?
I would think.
That's probably the best guess now because that keeps Oluokun or Lloyd from changing. You know, they're still essentially inside linebackers. But it's very interesting. I do think one thing that they like, if Ventrell Miller can ever be healthy, he is a fast guy. And I can really see Oluokun at the mic, Ventrell Miller at the weak, And then they move Lloyd to a Sam. I think Devin Lloyd could be a terrific Sam linebacker. Now, what happens when you go nickel? Who comes out of the game? Does Lloyd go back inside and Ventrell Miller comes out of the game? Which is what I would guess, by the way. I would think you're going to want Lloyd on the field. But again, I thought that was interesting. I thought they've confirmed now that they're a 4-3 football team, which is, I think, a pretty significant, even though we expected it, and we all kind of assumed that's what Ryan Nielsen had played before. It wasn't confirmed verbally by the football team, I think, until today.
Well, the other thing, too, that was all great stuff. The other thing that Trent talked about in that answer was we're now looking for a different type of defensive end than we were this time last year. So that was not good news for Yasir Abdullah because now they probably have some players on their roster, you know, that don't really fit unless they think Yasir Abdullah can play outside linebacker. I mean, his frame would suggest that that's his best chance of really doing anything with this. And that's not a big deal. I mean, he was a fifth round pick. So, right. But it just speaks to there is a little bit of a shift in what they're looking for from a personnel standpoint. So, I think it makes way more sense doing it this way than doing it in the 3-4 model.
And again, I know
people downplay it because of how much, you know, the nickel is played, but it's still 30% of anything is a lot. Yeah. I mean,
that's
so
right. And it's also your identity.
Right.
The formation you are in becomes your identity. Even if you're only in it 30% of the time, you're either a 4-3 team or a 3-4 team. People say it doesn't matter, but it really does matter. It does matter who you are. And the main reason is you've now got your two defensive ends who were, I mean, bro, they're both between 265 and almost 280. These are not outside line, your old school outside linebacker who were 6'3", 240. That's not what they're big physical defensive end types.
And we just don't want to see Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker dropping into coverage. I mean, you don't want to see that, you know, several times throughout a game. Correct.
And now I think you're not going to. All right. So more talk coming up about the Jags. Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson both met with the media today. We were all down there, and you'll hear those thoughts after the bottom of the hour. First, though, let's talk a little golf. JJ?
Time now for the Tour Update with Players Championship Executive Director Lee Smith.
Keep an eye on this one.
Presented by Sunshine Turf, the highest quality artificial turf at affordable prices.
And we thank our friends from Sunshine Turf, Caleb Smith. Call him today, 904-892-0580. He does a great job. You know by now he did so much of the work out at the Bregan Baseball Complex. About to do some more, by the way. A guy you can trust. Everyone's putting putting greens in their yard now, and they're putting turf playgrounds for their kids. You can do it at a real affordable price. 904-892-0580 for Sunshine Turf. Lee Smith joins us. How are you, buddy?
Doing great. I mean, 90 degrees outside.
Oh, it's hot out there. It's
like, Bermuda grass out there loves it.
I'll tell you the story about hot. This will resonate with you because you spent all those years in Vegas. First time I ever went to Vegas, I'd never been. It was like 20, 25 years ago. And it was right in the middle of the summer. And I looked at the temperature and I said, wow, it's going to be 102 degrees. But someone said, don't worry about it, Frank. It's dry heat. You'll be fine. No problem. I went out there. It was 102 degrees of that dry heat. It was hot as hell. Okay, yeah. I mean, so I don't care if it's wet, dry, or in between. 102 is hot.
Digits is hot.
That was my first example. That was my first entry into to Las Vegas. What about this guy, Scottie Scheffler, bro? I mean, good gracious alive. I asked you this last week. If he wins again, will this be the most dominant streak since Tiger? It's not Tiger. It's not Tiger-like yet. But I got to believe it is, right, Lee?
I mean, like, yeah, it has to be. I mean, obviously winning three times of three events of that magnitude. But then statistically, look at how dominating it is. You know, I was reading something today about he's led, I think, strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained approached, and strokes gained around the green the last 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months or something. I mean, just it's not only winning dominating, but, a lot of times in sports we talk about the eye test.
Yeah.
He passes the eye test also.
He's also so mentally tough, obviously – all sports require that, but golf in particular, to play at a championship level, he never has to scramble, kind of speaking to the stats you mentioned, but when he does make a mistake, he is so good at the bounce back.
It seems that he has a perspective, you know, that he's being compared to Tiger. Tiger was just the ultimate competitor, the Michael Jordan, Kobe, tear your heart out. It seems that Scotty is different in that way. He obviously talks about it, him being such a superior competitor and wants to win at everything and hates to lose. But it seems like his perspective of what a good shot and a bad shot means when he walks off the golf course and all those types of things just puts him in a great place to hit the right shot at the right time.
Lee, when you've been around all these great golfers your whole career, what makes a guy – I mean, this is not a black and white question, so there's more variables to it, I know that. But what makes a guy that consistent, the guy that just keeps hitting every fairway? And it's not great shot making, it's no bad shots. What makes a guy that consistent?
You know, it's tough. I think it varies from person to person, but I certainly repetition and talent and skill and all of those types of things, come into play. But I go back to again his perspective, and it just feels like he's always in the right place at the right time. And look, there's got to be a little bit of luck thrown in there, just and I don't mean luck in a bad way. I just mean that. You know, you catch the right wind, you catch the right bounce, you catch, those types of things. But, I think it speaks volumes to the fact that he creates his own luck by always hitting in the right place at the right time. And again, I think he's got a great partner out there in Ted Scott that they, not only get along professionally, but they get along personally and share the same values and share the same perspective. And when he starts talking about those stories about it, watched him chronicle his second shot on 13, and they both got to the ball and basically there was no question. Yeah, we're going for it, right? Yep, we're going for it. All right, let's move on. It wasn't a question as to where they were going to hit it.
They're on the same page.
Yeah, and you remember last week we identified those six shots that Jack said were important, and they became, whether it was Scotty hitting them or somebody else failing to hit them, they became a massive story, around 10, 11, 12, and 13.
That was great stuff, by the way. We talked about it after you left. That was a great take on that, because stuff we wouldn't have thought of. Hayes, I said it to you, and I'll say it to Lee now, too. Scotty Scheffler is the only other guy other than Tiger in my career of covering this. And maybe I wasn't as into covering golf when Nicklaus was in his prime, where you expect him to win every time, and he usually does. That doesn't happen in golf. You have guys that you are the favorite, right? But and Rory might have been the favorite, or Jordan Spieth might have been the favorite, or JT might have been the favorite, or Dustin Johnson, and there was a good chance they would win because they were playing better than anybody else. But it wasn't like you expected them to win, and then they won. Tiger, this is like Tiger. Tiger would line up. You would expect Tiger to win. And then he'd win. Tell the story that I'm drawing a blank. The Golf Channel guy.
Oh, Brent DeChambeau.
Tell the story again. Tell the story you told us before that tournament.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, where it was like Chambeau was asked his prediction for the Masters, and he said if Scheffler
four outcomes,
outcomes. Yeah. If Scheffler putts well, it'll be a runaway. Yep. If Scheffler putts average, he'll win by four. If Scheffler putts poorly, he'll win by two. And if Scheffler suffers a neck injury, he'll win by one.
Yeah. I mean that.
Yeah, in a playoff or something. That,
and he's right.
Yeah,
he putted average and won by four.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing stuff.
It truly is. Obviously there was some contenders there that fell off, but I was really impressed with Ludvig Åberg. I mean, he's obviously gotten a lot of buzz from the people that really follow the game closely. It was the first time I'd really gotten a chance to see him at this kind of a at moment. And I get he didn't win it, mm-hmm. but he looks like somebody that could absolutely be a tremendous champion moving forward in a lot of big events.
Yeah, I think talent and skill is unquestioned as to what you saw. I think his demeanor and the way he carried himself, I think, was probably even more impressive than the length he hit it off the tee or some of the shots he hit. Just when he hit a poor shot versus when he made the putt on nine that went in the hole going about 50 miles an hour, he had the same look on his face. He had a smile and an understanding. I loved Max Homa's quote about playing with gratitude, and it just seemed like Ludvig was doing the same thing. Like he was really, really happy to be there, trying to win the win the golf tournament and, you know, unfortunately hit a poor shot on 11 that kind of sunk his chances. But then he bounced back from that and made a couple birdies coming in to certainly finish where he finished, which was fantastic.
Lee Smith with us. He's the executive director of the Players Championship. He's our golf analyst. It's our golf report brought to you by our friends at Sunshine Turf. Let's get to Tiger for a second. It was great that he tried. His resolve is phenomenal. It really is. He's still probably the greatest player ever, or certainly many of our lifetimes. But what now for him, Lee? It's clear it's going to be hard for him to compete in terms of trying to win a golf tournament. And he loves to compete, and he's the toughest competitor ever. But does he wait and find his way to the Champions Tour? Does he play a handful? Does he play the majors? And this keeps happening where he does the best he can, but is really no factor. What's best for him, in your opinion, and what are your expectations as to what he will do?
Well, look, I think it was ultimately just you garnered hope when he made the cut, and had his perspective of, hey, I'm only six back or eight back, whatever he was after, you know, Friday, and said, look, I can put a good one together, shoot 65 on Saturday, and I'm right back in this thing. And unfortunately, 7-under turned into, you know, 82 or whatever it was, and he was lost. I think his golf swing that is now so upper body oriented, I think it's going to take a lot of time for him to grow into. You know, he's just got lack of leg drive, lack of leg push compared to others, especially in the modern game. And so I still hold out hope that he continues to strengthen and, you know, really coordinate that golf swing into being able to recover and play every month. And, you know, I think what we could see is, you know, he plays 6, 7, 8 times a year. Going forward, and you know, maybe competes in one or two of those, or contends in one or two of those. I think that would be a pretty good upside for all of
even
us
at
to 40, see.
Even at 48, you see that the possibility exists.
You know, Jack won at 46.
He did.
Phil won at 50.
He did
something
and way more and recently
a major championship. So look, it's a week, right?
That's right. It's
four rounds of golf. We saw him play two.
Yeah.
So as he multiplies two and three and puts four together, I think that can happen once or twice a year.
Good.
Three players that didn't make the cut at Augusta: Justin Thomas, Victor Hovland, and Jordan Spieth. How would you sort of rank those guys in terms of confidence that they're going to recover and get back on the right track?
I don't know. I didn't see where Justin ended today, but I saw that he got to a few under par, which, you know, certainly a totally different golf course that they're playing this week. That's a little more course management, curving your ball, all those types of things. I got to think that just because it was so recent that Victor's the closest, but unfortunately we really haven't seen any sparks, from him in a while, which almost makes it feel like he's the furthest. You know, Spieth can be driven by that putter, and it seems like he's always the closest, because once the 20 footers start falling, he can contend really, really fast.
JT is 2-under for today.
Yeah, which I think is great for him to get started.
A year ago or so, I thought John Rahm was the best player in the world, and I didn't even think it was close. Now, I was wrong, because Scottie Scheffler was right there, but at least me watching, I thought John Rahm was the best player in the world, and I thought there was a gap. He was terrible. His ROM ruined him? I mean, his live ruined him? His playing 54 holes? And am I overthinking that? I mean, he's a different guy, man. What do you think?
Yeah, it's I think it's difficult because we just don't see him enough.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine they're practicing any less. You know, I can't imagine that you add it all up that, you know, the only thing I think that's decreased is their competitive holes. I think, Frank, that may be the easiest way to think of it. I can't imagine that he doesn't resurface. He's just too talented not to.
Yeah. You would think.
But, look, we only go by what we see, and what we saw is that, you know, maybe the knife's just not as sharp because the competitive rounds just aren't there.
I was shocked. I was shocked. And I will tell you, a buddy of mine, one of my really good friends, Jamie Shelton, who was the executive director of the best, but you know, we played, you know, Jamie, we played golf with Jamie, you and I did. he went down to Doral with a bunch of buddies just to watch a live event. And he said it was fun. He said, but they're in shorts. There's music playing on the tee box. They're cutting up. Nobody goes. So they're cutting up with the handful of fans that are there. Phil Mickelson's walking alongside him. And I don't know, Lee. For me, it just seems like it's batting practice. It's not the real game. It's an exhibition. Well, I know in baseball, if all you do is take batting practice, don't play in games, you're not going to hit. You got to play in some games. It just felt like to me, hearing Jamie describe it, watching Rom, that all these guys are doing is playing in exhibitions, and how do you get good at playing in the game if you have no games? And maybe I'm overthinking it, but it sure feels that way to me.
No, look, I think there's a practical approach to thinking that way, and that, hey, the best way for me to sharpen my knife is to always be competing.
Yeah, right.
And
in real games.
Yeah, and in figuring out a way to play 72 holes, you know, you've got to practice the way that you're going to play, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, coming and playing in 72-hole majors after, you know, playing in a different format, a different atmosphere, I think has got to be tough. It's only, you know, I think it's only going to be, you know, for those special competitors that are going to be able to contend in the big ones.
I didn't realize that the Hilton Head tournament, the purse is $20 million now.
Yeah. Wow. Signature event. Yeah.
Signature event. Yeah. So give it, I know obviously they've started, but what kind of tournament do you think we'll see this weekend?
You know, I think one of the things about, you know, Hilton Head is that golf course, they're playing a par 71. I think it's 7,200 yards. Like it kind of gets pushed into the corner of a short golf course and got to curve your ball. And it's, but 7,200 yards at par 71 isn't short.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if you give 100 yards to each stroke of par, that's, 7,300, and Augusta was just 7,500. It isn't that short.
Have you been to Harbortown?
I have not.
I've never been there.
But
I see it all the time. I mean, it's close enough that I'm surprised I haven't been there, but I've never been there.
Yeah. No, I think that it's always a – Matt Fitzpatrick, the defending champion, which the golf course really, really fits a guy like that.
Right.
And it sounds like, you know, you got to get your putter going there to really, really contend.
Yeah, JT Poston leads as we speak. But, I've been to Kiowa and been to Isle of Palms, but I've never been to – I don't know why I've never been. I just haven't ever been.
You know, one other tournament that's happening now that I think is mm-hmm. worthwhile, Miles Russell's 15 years old playing in the Korn Ferry event this week. And, you know, I think he birdied 4 out of his first 5 holes or something. You know, for a local that's 15 years old, you'd think he may step on there and maybe be intimidated
and
start slow, but he birdied 4 out of his first 5 holes. That's impressive.
Final thing before we let you go. It does seem that the LIV group, I don't want to say it's panicking, but, and I think you've kind of explained it. Here's my take. They were close to some sort of a merge. Whatever happened, didn't happen, will happen, whatever. But the thing you've explained to us better before I really understood it is the investment dollars that the tour went and got are real. Those dollars are
absolutely
real. I mean, that's real money.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost seemed to give the tour more leverage, and I may be repeating stuff that you've told us, and I'm just kind of – I'm a slow guy. I'm gathering. I'm a public school guy. But they've got real leverage now. And that may be all of a sudden they're not in a hurry, and it's made the LIV people concerned now. Am I oversimplifying it? Is there some truth to that?
Yeah, probably. I think it depends on your perspective, you know, Frank. There's LIV's a competitive golf league that, you know, we feel from the PGA Tour is important, that bringing all the best players together is the best for global golf and is the best for fans, which, you know, ultimately that's the most important part is, you know, we want fans to consume the tournaments, you know, on site and through TV and through, you know, many of the streaming vehicles as right. You know, as outlined with us and our investment in our studios building that's opening up next year. But bringing all of those groups together is the best for golf. But certainly having, you know, 200 plus years of sports industry experience coming along with a capital infusion from the Strategic Sports Group is important to our future. And I think makes the fact that we're working on this negotiation as, you know, something that Nobody has to hurry to get it done. We want to make sure that it's all done the right way.
Lee Smith from the Players Championship, the executive director, our golf analyst. The report is brought to you by my friends at Sunshine Turf. One more time, call Caleb. Great guy. You're going to like him. 904-892-0580. If you're thinking about putting a putting green in your yard or turf in your yard, nobody does a better job than Caleb and the folks at Sunshine Turf. Lee, thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week is next, so stay with us.
And now, this week's Scholar Athlete of the Week, brought to you by Southeast Orthopedic Specialists and the Plumbers and Pipefitters Local Union 234 on 1010XL.
And we welcome you back to the program, Frank Frangie, Hayes, Caroline. It is a pleasure to welcome in our Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week. Saloni Joshi joins us from Wolfson. How you doing?
Great. Thank you. How are you guys?
We are doing fine. Great. And you came in here and you said you knew both our names because you've listened forever. So you've now become our favorite all-time Duval County Scholar Athlete. Right out of that didn't take long, right out of the gate. So congratulations. Good to have you.
Thank you so much.
You run track and cross country.
Yes, sir.
And have for a long time. Tell us all about that. How you got going on that?
So in my when COVID started, I started running a lot just for like mental health purposes. And I got super into it. And I just would go out and run every day. And in my freshman year, I decided to try out for the cross country team and fell in love with it. Fell in love with my coaches and the team, and I've been running ever since. I love it. It's my passion for sure.
Very cool.
What's been your favorite race that you've had in cross country?
Favorite race was States, which we made this year for the first time in 20 years for Wolfson, which is a big deal, and love that course. So, yeah.
Let's talk about things you do apart from running. Obviously, you're involved in National Honor Society because you're a great student, but you're involved in a lot of clubs, World Affairs Club, Scholars Club, Interact Club. Tell us about stuff you do when you're not studying or running.
So one thing we got to do recently, which is really cool as a part of World Affairs Club, was go to World Quest, which is this really interesting competition. We all meet up at UNF, and it's like two different teams from each school that participates in World Affairs Council, and you do like a trivia night, and so it's just like a bunch of questions about the world, history, mathematics, science, and that was so much fun. It was just fun to meet new kids and like in a trivia setting. I don't know, that was the best part of this year in terms of my clubs. That was so much fun.
Sounds like it.
Absolutely. When you're in season, how much running will you do to prepare yourself for a race?
So typically, for cross country, we train all summer. In the summer, my teammates and I usually try to run about 30 miles a week. And then into the season, we're running about 20, 30 miles a week with practice and then long runs on the weekend and stuff like that.
So tell us a little bit about college. Where are you going? What do you want to study the whole bit?
So I'm going to FSU in the summer, and my major is exercise science because I want to go to med school. So very excited, and nutrition, physiology, kinesiology is everything I'm interested in, so very excited to go study that.
That's all. What do you hope to do 10 years down the line once you're done with your schooling?
I know that I want to be in the health field. I don't know exactly what I want to pursue. My dad's an allergist, so yeah. That's one line of work that I could enter. Dermatology, physical therapy. I really like sports medicine. The world of sports medicine or sports journalism even. Really, anything related to exercise science is like up my alley.
I see. Because of your dad, I mean, how'd you get? Why does that move the needle for you like it does? That's very cool.
It's just like recently, or in the past couple of years, I've just like become just a healthier person overall. I've gotten really into like dietetics, just like the mind body connection, figuring out what foods to eat, what workouts to do, and just like it's like kind of been like my thing is just like nutrition science, exercise science. And I know I want to study it and do research in that field. So it's very interesting to me. But right. Yeah.
Well, Saloni Joshi is our Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week. She's from Wolfson. You are going to be a megastar.
I'm
just telling you, I can tell you right now, whatever you choose, you are going to be a megastar.
Thank you so much.
You in here, and congratulations. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Saloni Joshi from Wolfson High School. Boy, what a star she is. And she is our Duval County Scholar Athlete of the Week, and it's great to have her here in studio.
That's a big one for the Noles.
That is a big one for the Noles. You know, that's a miss for Florida,
yes.
Georgia, Miami, and all the rest. There's no question about it. She will be an absolute star. We want you to hear the comments of Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson. They both met with the media today. We told you a little bit about what they said. We're going to give you some specific comments from them. That comes up after this. It's 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Frangie and Caroline, La Selva with you on this Thursday, brought to you by our friends at Stanley Pools. Trent Baalke met with the media today, as did Doug Peterson. We'll start with Trent's comments. Number one, you've got your roster built until the draft. We asked Trent today, how does he feel about this roster after free agency got completed?
Yeah, I think you try to address needs in free agency, and you try to attack it that way. The less needs you have going into the draft, the better, obviously, because it allows you to then stick to that formula of drafting the best player available. But we feel comfortable. You know, I think and Coach can speak on that, too. We feel comfortable with where we're at, but we got a ways to go.
He also was asked about how good a draft is it? How good's the talent here?
I think it's no different than most drafts. I think there's talent at all levels. You just got to find them. You know, and a lot of finding them is fit. A lot of finding them is opportunity. You know, giving them an opportunity once you get them, you know, on your program within the organization. So, I think it's no different. I like this group of players coming in. It's a little bit older. It's an older group because of the COVID situation and guys that went back for their fifth, 6 years of college. So, that's a little different for us.
Obviously, one of the questions, or not all the questions, are going to be about the draft. The one story now that will be a story till it's not, the Trevor extension. You extended Josh Allen. Do you extend Trevor Lawrence, and when do you do it? The GM was asked about that as well.
I try not to force anything. You know, we've had some great talks, some great conversations. I spoke with his agency again last night. You know, we're working. You know, but you can't force this stuff. It's you know, I said the same thing with Josh's situation. I said it would take some time. It did. But we were glad that it got completed when it did, so we could go into this offseason program knowing that that's behind us and we can move forward. So we're working at it. We'll continue to work at it. You know, ownership's involved, obviously. You know, coaches involved. We're going to put our best foot forward and hope to get something accomplished here.
And the final question we'll play you from the general manager, Trent Baalke. They hired Ryan Nielsen as the defensive coordinator. We already talked about how the scheme will change. Trent was asked about how that changes the way you draft.
There's a definite change. You're going from a 30 to a 40. You know, what he's looking for at the end position is different than we were looking for, you know, in the last scheme. So there's definitely a change, but it's a change I'm very familiar with. So it's been good. You know, Ryan and his staff, you know, we've had very good dialogue. We spent a lot of time when he first got here going through exactly what he was looking for at the different positions, how we were going to play the corners in this scheme versus how we played them in the past. How the linebackers were going to fit and how we were going to get the Sam linebacker position filled from within. You know, so we had a lot of great dialogue, you know, and it's been fun to learn what he's looking for in players. He comes from, you know, he was with Coach Payton, and that goes back to Coach Parcells. So the traits that he's looking for, I'm very familiar with, obviously. So it's been good.
The comments of Trent Baalke. Seems ready for the draft, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And I think they're in a really good spot. I mean, it's 17. Obviously, the season didn't end the way they wanted, but there's nothing you can do about that now. Now it's take advantage of it as best you can. And I think in an ideal world, you would see something where they trade back a couple times, pick up some extra draft capital, and still get a corner that they feel great about.
Doug Peterson was there as well. Trent Baalke, you heard him say, Coach can speak about how he feels about the roster now. Doug Peterson was asked that question.
You know, the first thing we try to do every offseason is try to re-sign our own guys, right? That's kind of the priority there, and then look outside the building, you know, to fill, as Trent was saying, to fill those immediate needs possibly there, and then obviously this third bucket is the draft, and so you feel good with the guys you got in the building because you were able to, you know, answer a couple of questions, and now heading into next week, you feel now you're just adding more talent, more depth, and the competition that as coaches we look for as we continue to build.
Now, one of the things that was a real Achilles heel of this team last year was short yardage offense, and I think everybody knows that. They talked about it all during the season and in the offseason. Doug Peterson was asked, have you done enough now to fix the short yardage concerns?
I do. I mean, that's something that we've, as a staff, we've focused on this offseason so far, and you know, put our finger on some of the whys, you know, why we weren't as good in third and one and fourth and one situations, and all things that are correctable and fixable, and you know, Tank's going to be a part of that. Travis is going to be a part of that. As we know, Ezra will be a part of that, and you know, whether it's Luke or Mitch, they're going to be a part of that. So, you know, we've got a plan. We're going to stick to our plan. We got to be convicted on it. We've got to, you know, present it to the players the same way and make the necessary corrections this offseason to fix those areas.
And finally, from Doug Peterson, there's rules changes all the time in pro football, but this new kickoff rule is a big one, with the linemen closer to each other, with balls going to be in play for many more reasons. Doug likes the new kickoff rule, and he explained why.
I like the rule. I think it's going to bring excitement back to our game. You know, there were close to 2,000 kickoffs last year, and you know, 21-22% were returned, where back in, you know, 2010, we were up to about 80%, you know, almost 90% returnable, you know, kicks. So it's going to bring some excitement back to the football game. You know, as Trent mentioned, the dual returners back there, it's going to look different. You know, it's going to look a little awkward at first. It's going to take some getting used to. I mean, you know, Heath Farwell, Luke Thompson, special teams guys here are really diving into the X's and O's. And to Trent's point, I think you're going to see bigger athletic guys, you know, that are especially on the return team that can run and move, and because they're going to be a little bit closer together, and being able to block a little bit faster. So, you know, we're working through all those things right now. This spring is going to be important for us as we dive into, you know, the next phase 2 and phase 3, and really kind of iron out our own design, you know, and figure out who our two guys, you know, back there and what it's going to look like.
The comments of Doug Peterson after the comments of his general manager, Trent Baalke. I will tell you, I learned some things about the kickoff. I didn't realize they're going to use bigger people on special teams. I would have never thought that, but it makes sense. Before, everybody was all spread out, so who can move the fastest and avoid the blocks with from a long distance? Now that everybody starts 10 yards apart, it's more of a wrestling match. It's now the blocking's in a phone booth now. So the bigger and the more physical you are, and yet you have to have two return guys, because – With it almost being these mortar kicks now, it's easier to kick away from one guy. So that's two things I would not have thought about.
Yeah, I will say this. I guarantee you whoever handles this the best will earn one of the playoff spots.
You would think,
It will be. This will be the difference in average team, but if they are excellent at handling this new rule, it will be the difference in a win or two, which will probably be the difference in them making the tournament. So – I think it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. And again, we know Duvernay wants to handle the ball. That we know that's the plan. But who's the second guy going to be for the Jaguars? That'll be really interesting to see who they deploy back there.
We'll take a break. We'll keep it on the NFL. Pete Prisco joins us after this. Thursday instead of Friday for this week. We'll talk to the NFL with Pete Prisco after this. Stay with us.
Time for all things Jaguars and NFL with Pete Prisco. The Prisco Report, presented by Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles.
Showtime.
On the Frangie Show.
We always appreciate our friends from Showtime. And this week, they've got one of those in-store card shows. That's on Saturday from 9 to 4. There's never a bad time to go to Showtime. But, man, get in there when they have those monthly card shows. 9 to 4, so many vendors, so many items. And James Spence Authentication, JSA, will also be in store to authenticate your signed items. They're there from 11 to 3, and the card show goes 9 to 4. Never a bad time to go to Showtime, but this is a great time because the card show and JSA will all be there. They sponsor the Pete Prisco Report. Pete joins us from CBS Sports. He's on with us Thursday this week, back to Friday next week. Pete, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys?
We are doing fine. We as we always do, we have perused our way through the better-than list. Before we get into some of the names that I want to in a second, tell people how you started that, Pete, and what it's all about.
Well, I've been doing it for 20 years now, 25, 22, 23 years, right, since I've been at CBS. And what I do is I go through, you know, I watch tons of college football. And when I jot that guy's name down during the season, I go back and watch him afterwards to get an evaluation of him as I start my draft process. And I usually come up with a list about 35 names at the end, and then I cut it down to 20 and pick one guy to be the captain. And they're guys I like. They're down-the-line guys. You know, some of them have worked their way into the first round, but most of them are down-the-line guys who I like better than what most of the scouts think of them.
Yeah. Well, one guy, and I like always like to start with the local guys or the area guys. You love Trey Benson. I love Trey Benson. I think he is such a good player. I think he's got burst. He knows how to run. So I'm right with you. I haven't seen a lot of these guys, Pete, but I've seen him. A really good player. Tell us what you like about Trey Benson.
Yeah, and the fact that he came back from what was a devastating knee injury. I mean, that thing was it was really bad at Oregon, and that tells you he worked his way to get back to where he was. He's a physical back. He has the speed to go the distance. We've seen that a bunch. And, you know, if there's one criticism on him, it's that sometimes he looks to bounce too much. But I think that's something that he will get out of his game. And I think as he gets more experience running the football, he'll get better at it. I love him. I think it's between him and Brooks, who, by the way, is coming off an ACL from Texas as the two best backs in this draft.
Pete, tell us about your captain of the better than team.
You know, I watched Utah and I knew of the other safety. And so I started out watching the other safety, Cole Bishop, and I had watched Utah, and I remember this kid catching the ball and running the ball. And then I watched him at safety, and I studied his tape, and I went, wow, he's near the line of scrimmage. He's a great tackler. He can blitz. He's not the best cover safety, but he's good enough, and I think he'll get better. He went there in 2000. Think about this. He went there in 2019 and then served the Mormon mission for 2 years, played 2 years at Utah, and then petitioned to get into the draft, and they allowed him to get into the draft. And that's where he is. He's a very inexperienced player. But, man, I'll tell you what, Sione Vaki, if you put the tape on, you see pure football player. Worst-case scenario for him is he's one of the best core special teams players in the league.
You talked about this guy last week because I asked you if there's any quarterbacks you like beyond the top four that everyone's talking about. I guess I'm asking you to repeat yourself, but you really like Michael Pratt, the quarterback from Tulane, don't you?
I do. And, you know, he's got a lot of starts, you know, and that matters, I think. You know, there's some of these guys in this class don't, but he does. He also got better every single season. He's got a good enough arm. It's not a great arm. It's a good enough arm. He's competed to improve his completion percentage every year. And when you look at him, he just understands the quarterback position. There were concerns about his arm strength by some scouts when you talk to him, but then he had a pro day, and he worked on his mechanics, and every guy came out of there saying that how much better he threw the football. So I think third or fourth round for Michael Pratt, you're going to get a guy who's going to be a backup for a year or two, and I think he'll ultimately end up being a starter.
Pete, we had the draft luncheon today, and Trevor Lawrence spoke a couple days ago. It seems like from the player indications and Trent Baalke talking about it today that a Trevor Lawrence extension might be kind of close. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's the smart thing to do. And you look, all you have to do is look at this draft and try and take a peek and see all the guys right now that are trying to fix the quarterback position. He's your guy. You know he's your guy. He didn't play great last year, but you know he's your guy. And I think he's going to be a special quarterback. Get it done. They'll find a way to get it done, and I think they should find a way.
And I agree with you, and I think that's where we're headed. Just like with Josh Allen, there's no. I almost think it's a non-story if the story is what happens if you don't sign him, because somehow, some way, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be the quarterback here a long, long time. I'd be shocked if he's not, Pete, so we'll see if that happens. All right, next time we talk to you, the Jags will have had – they will have made the pick, because we're going to talk to you a week from tomorrow. Terrion Arnold's who everybody says – cornerback's the position we're all guessing, or Quinshon Mitchell. Brian Thomas, the receiver from LSU, will be there. I don't think they're moving up or down. That's my opinion. What's your gut right now as we sit here 7 days out?
Arnold. I think he'll be there. I don't think Mitchell will be there. And I think they're going to have an opportunity to grab a good corner. You know, he didn't run that well. His 40 time wasn't great, but he plays faster than that, and I think he's going to be able to step in there and be a guy that can really limit what they do on the outside in terms of the passing game. He's a good kid. He works at it. He made himself into a good player. I think Arnold will be the guy. But there are other options, as you mentioned. One guy that doesn't get mentioned a lot is Murphy, the defensive tackle from Texas. And you look at their roster and say, well, do they really need – but he's an up-the-field, quick, penetrating defensive tackle in the Aaron Donald mode. And so I think he's a possibility if we were there. But in the end, I think it's going to be Arnold, the corner.
Do you buy that Murphy could be a sneaky top 10 pick?
I don't think he gets by Seattle. That's why I don't think he'll be there when Jacksonville picks. You hear that, you know, a lot of the talk is the Seahawks love him. But yeah, I think there's a possibility he could work himself into the top 10. I mean, he is really good. And everybody wants to look for the next Aaron Donald. And he has the tools and the ability and the quickness to be that type of player. I'm not going to say he's going to be Aaron Donald because nobody has ever been that. At that size, but he's definitely in that mold a little bit. I think he'd be an option for them in the first round.
People are a week out. What are you hearing? Who's moving? Who's moving up? Who's moving down? Where's the surprise move? What do you hear 7 days before this thing?
You know, I heard one today from somebody in the league, 6 quarterbacks off the board by 15, and I don't believe it.
Really?
I didn't believe it, but then when you look at it, you go, okay, let's play this out. The 4 are definitely going in the top 6. How they go, who knows?
Right.
You know, but they're going. That's, you know, McCarthy being the last of them, or it might be the 3rd one, actually, because I told you guys last week, I hear New England loves them. So then you go from there, you go, okay, well, what happens to the next group? Well, the Atlanta Falcons signed Kirk Cousins, but they've been all over Michael Penix, and Kirk Cousins is not a kid anymore. So you got to try and solve that position for the long term. If you like Penix that much, maybe they take him at 8. These would all be good moves for Jacksonville, by the way, because it would push a lot of good players down. And then there's the Broncos. The Broncos need a quarterback, and there's a lot of people that think Bo Nix is in play there. They don't have a second-round pick, so they might not be able to get him in the second round. So if he's the guy, you take him. The Raiders need a quarterback. I don't think they're sold on their guy, so you go in and maybe you hear they like Penix. So I think there's, you know, when the guy told me that, I went, no, I don't think so. And then I started thinking of it. If you don't have one, you got to do everything you can in the new power to fix it. And those guys are sitting there, so maybe it's a possibility.
I tell you what, Hayes, to what he just said, I'd be surprised if the Falcons go quarterback there. I don't agree. That would shock me. But the other two, and maybe even some other teams, it would not surprise me if Penix and Nix go top 15 or 20. It would not surprise me.
You got to have your guy.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
The NFL is almost like college softball. I mean, there's no rotation here.
Right.
You know, if you have an ace in college softball, she's starting every game.
Every game.
And that's what the NFL is, a quarterback. I mean, if you don't have that guy, you have very little chance of being competitive, and you have basically zero chance of winning anything of consequence. So, yeah, I mean, I think there absolutely could be a rush. And, you know, I think Pete is onto something there with that. Pete, do you have any thoughts on, in terms of 48, Troy Franklin? That might be a sweet spot for him, and you really like him, correct?
I do like him. He's a thin receiver, but boy, I tell you what, you put the tape on, the kid can fly. I mean, he's one of those, you put the ball in his hands and they have to hold their breath. I mean, there are many plays where he takes a slant and, you know, splits the defense and nobody touches him and he goes 70 yards. I mean, that there aren't a lot of guys that can do that. He can do that. Depending if they go corner in the first round, you know, that kind of receiver in the second round. Here's another one. If McConkey somehow was sitting there, I'd give him strong consideration. I think McConkey's a big time player and plays, you know, everybody thinks he's a slow receiver. He's not slow. He plays fast. He's a fast guy. I think he'd be a guy you'd consider if you're going to look wide receiver. And I think they will look wide receiver. And this is a good wide receiver class. But, yeah, I think those are two guys to keep an eye on.
The general perception in the fan base, I would guess, and maybe even in the media contingent as well, Pete, is that cornerback and receiver are clearly need spots 1 and 2. I still think edge because I just don't think you can have enough of them. Others think offensive line because there's not much depth there. But are you in agreement that it's corner and receiver in whatever order, and then there's a gap after that if you're talking about needs?
Yeah, I don't think they need a receiver right now. They need a receiver for Trevor Lawrence for his career.
Right.
And by that, they don't have a developmental guy. You know, you know, Kirk has got a big number next year. He's a good player. Zay Jones is out after this year with his contract. And so you need a guy, that guy. You need Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence has his guy. You know, Joe Burrow has, you know, Chase. Well, you need Trevor Lawrence to get his guy. And that's where I think that they would consider it at 17 if they went in that direction. Not for this year, but just to have him develop with that young quarterback for the long haul. That's why I think it's corner and receiver more than the other position.
Do you think Brandon Ayuk will get moved before the draft?
You start to hear more, you know, heat on that, so it's a strong possibility. Again, if I'm Jacksonville, I'm not doing that. I'm you're not in a situation where you have your quarterback. You got to pay your quarterback. You just paid your pass rusher. You're going to trade for Ayuk, and you just paid a boatload to wide receivers in the last couple of years, and you're going to pay Ayuk, trade, give up the asset, and pay him? I don't like it. I wouldn't do it if I were them. And I like Ayuk as a player. Don't get me wrong. I just wouldn't do it.
I don't think, Pete, we're going to get off the draft here, and then we'll wrap with you. Of all the things that came out of the presser today, it wasn't news because we assumed it was going there, but it kind of was because they haven't confirmed it, that they are now going to be a 4-3 front. They are not going to be a 50 front anymore. He said we're going from a 30 to a 40. And again, we all kind of assumed that. But two things for me, I want to get your thoughts. Number one, I love that Trayvon Walker is going to have his hand on the ground every play now. I think that's what he is. I've stated that from the day they drafted him. I think you did too. And so Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker are no longer going to be outside linebackers, even in name. They're going to be defensive ends in a 4-3. How do you feel about that? I love it. Secondly, Trent did say because of that, they've got to find a Sam linebacker internally. Remember, in a 3-4, you don't run. You use two inside linebackers and two edges, really. So is it Chad Muma? Is it does Muma or Ventrell Miller play the weak side and Devin Lloyd moves out to the Sam? Because in your base, you're a 4-3 team. Who do you think? Do you like it overall, and what do you think the answer is there?
Well, I like it because I think, you know, Ryan Nielsen's a defensive line coach at heart, and yep. He wants to rush with four guys. And I think, like you said, Walker's going to be better with his hand on the ground. I mean, I don't think there's any – I've preached that from the word get-go. I thought he was a guy who could play with his hand on the ground and should play with his hand on the ground. So that makes sense. As far as the Sam linebacker, that guy's on the field only like 30% of the time.
Correct.
Anyway.
Correct.
So I think that should be the least of their worries, you know, at least, you know, until you figure out who it is. But you can find a guy. I think Muma could play over there. I think Muma's capable of doing it. And by the way, he's drafted a linebacker for every year. Probably draft three more in this draft and find a way to find a Sam linebacker. Let me tell you, if there's a linebacker in this draft they'll like, he'll find a way to draft.
Pete Frisco checking in from CBS Sports. Pete, we'll talk to you next Friday after the draft. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Take care.
All right. That report is brought to you by Showtime Sports Cards and Collectibles. One more time this Saturday, 2 days from now, the in-store card show, 9 to 4. They have great vendors, great items. It's a great card show. They do it once a month. James Spence Authentication also will be there, the best in the business. So if you need your memorabilia authenticated, nobody does a better job than James Spence. Go over there. He's there from 11 to 3. I need headlines. I got everything else, Carline. I don't have many needs. My needs are small, as Gene Hackman said in Superman. My needs are small. He only wanted Australia.
Yeah.
All I want are headlines.
Yeah.
This is 1010
XL. I'll be the General Zod.
Be Zod. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Gather around.
It's Hayes' Headlines, presented by Harrell & Harrell. Don't settle for less than you deserve.
Hear all about it.
Here's Hayes Carline.
All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, JJ LaSelva. I'm Hayes Carline. I want to thank our friends at Harrell & Harrell for sponsoring the headlines, and we'll dive right in. Frank, we were there for the draft luncheon today. Is the Trevor Lawrence deal close? Is that what you gathered from listening to Trent Baalke?
It is, and it's what I've kind of believed even before that. I don't want to say it's a non-story, but a lot of times, Hayes, there's a question about whether or not a guy's going to be on the team long haul. Josh Allen, there was a question last year this time whether or not he was going to be on the team long haul. There's always questions about whether a guy gets a second contract. I want to see it. It's his prove it year. There's no question Trevor Lawrence is going to be on this team for 10 years. So it's not a big story to me. But to your question, yes, you got the impression today, and we continue to get the impression in other avenues or through other avenues, that it's probably going to happen sooner rather than later, and that's a good thing. I'd love to see it get done before the season and go have fun.
Do you think there's some synergy on getting the Lawrence deal done prior to announcing the stadium?
You know what? I hadn't thought about that. There could be, couldn't there? You know, usually those two worlds don't meet. The football world and the business world don't meet very often, not just here, but in any team. And I don't think they collaborate for that purpose. But there'd be worse things than to be able to announce the Trevor Lawrence extension and a new stadium arrangement in similar times. Yeah, it's good. I don't know. It's a great question.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. The Athletic's Austin Mock did an interesting power rankings for the NFL using a projection model, very analytical. He ranked the rosters 1 through 32. He had the Jaguars 18th. That was second best in the AFC South. He had Houston 11th. And he had some interesting comments that I was a little surprised they were that low, right. But I kind of understand. He writes, I don't know what to make of this team. I think Trevor Lawrence is better than he's shown, but things just haven't gone right for him so far. Maybe it's because the offensive line is bottom 10 in the league. I'm not sure. Outside of Lawrence's high ceiling, the rest of the roster needs a lot of work, as they don't have a single position group that ranks inside the top 10. I was surprised because I would say Trayvon and Josh Allen have to rank inside a top 10 if you're talking about pressure in the quarterback.
But that would be the only one if you're from the outside looking in. The only position group that would wow you if you're in Peoria would be, other than Trevor Lawrence's ceiling, would be the pass rushers. Now listen, I like their receiver room with Gabe Davis. I like their running back room because I think there's something there with Tank Bigsby. I like their linebackers. But I can see if I'm sitting in Los Angeles or New York and doing a power poll of position groups league-wide, I probably wouldn't have them very high either. So the sum of the parts will be recognized as better than the parts, I think. They'll be, other than Trevor Lawrence, I think that's who this team will be.
In college football, Billy Napier had some interesting comments with Josh Pate during their interview, talking about the special teams, and we've obviously lamented the mistakes. Josh Pate asked Billy Napier about it, and I was surprised by Napier's answer. Here it is.
I think there's a little bit of perception and reality there, right? There's no question we had some organizational issues on special teams. And we had a couple young players, true freshmen, that made some critical mistakes. You know, we got two threes on the field. We have a punt block versus Georgia. We jump over the shield versus Kentucky. We got a handful of plays where we got 10 on the field. But reality is the stats would say that we were pretty good on special teams. I think we were top 25 in the country in EPA, and a couple of our units are top 10 in the country. So for me, one of the things that we did in the offseason is we added another layer of expertise there. Joe Houston came over from the New England Patriots, and he's joined our staff this offseason. So I feel as if we've addressed some of those things.
Are you surprised by those comments?
Yeah,
that he thinks they were actually good?
Yeah, I like Billy Napier, and I know he's an analytics guy, and maybe the analytics say that, I don't know. But that's not a very smart comment. His comment should be, we messed up a lot of stuff on special teams, and it's my job to get it fixed. That's your comment. You don't try, even regardless of what the analytics say, don't tell people what they obviously see they didn't see. Because that's what that is. That's telling people what they clearly saw they didn't see. No, they messed up way too. They lost an Arkansas game because of it. They had the embarrassing number three thing in the very first game of the year. Listen, that spring game, I hate to say this, but not only were there only 10 guys on the field a couple times, you know, I watch this stuff closely because I'm sick and I have no life, but did you notice on the field goal that won the game, mm-hmm. were you watching that? On the field goal that
no.
won the game, they yeah. set it up, they yeah. gave him an extra time,
yeah.
they let the clock stop
right.
when it normally wouldn't have, just so Smack could kick a field goal to win the game.
Uh-huh.
Well, go back and watch it. Arliss Boardingham, who's the wing on the team to kick the field goal to win the game,
yeah.
raced out at the last minute, almost before the ball was snapped. So, I mean, this is a
yeah.
spring game. This
yeah.
is after the 2-10 on the field. So,
right.
no, he's I like Billy. Billy, your answer should be, we messed up special teams too many times, and it's my job to get it fixed. That's one sentence, and I wouldn't expound on it.
The 85-man scholarship limit is really becoming null and void in the NIL age because schools are wisely just taking players as walk-ons,
yeah.
but then giving them NIL dollars so they obviously can afford the tuition and obviously probably put some in their pocket as well. Do you like that?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. What does bother me now is I'm not sure what's going to happen first, the end of the world as we know it, or the end of the COVID eligibility for these guys. The extra year, I knew there was an extra year of COVID. I didn't know there were 38 extra
right.
years of COVID. I mean, when is that over?
I don't know.
I'm glad guys get to keep playing,
yeah.
but between the extra 28 years because of COVID and staying in college because of NIL, look, we're going to have – wasn't somebody playing his ninth year last year or something like
yeah.
that? There was a guy that was played his ninth year. He was ninth.
I think he's still playing this
year. It was 9 years. Yeah. Was it a Miami guy?
I think so.
JJ, yeah. Was it one of your guys, 9 years or something?
Yeah, he was a tight end, right?
Yeah, no, tight end.
Oregon or something.
You're nine, yeah. Okay? You're, I mean, again, he's
older than me.
He was. Well, I heard he was trying to decide between college football and assisted living. Wasn't sure which way to go.
Absolutely. Our good buddy Lee Smith brought this to our attention when he joined us to talk golf. What a story. Local phenom Miles Russell shoots 3-under at the PGA Tour-sanctioned Corn Ferry event. He's 15 years old. Here's Miles talking about his day.
I was a little nervous. I mean, got to be nervous on your first tee, but, you know, it was fun. I mean, eased into the round nicely with the birdie on the first, so it made it easy. Start off with some putting, just kind of get it going and get the stroke feeling good, then hit over the chipping green. Loosen up just a little bit, get a little touch, then go hit a couple and go back and do a little lag putting before I go out and a couple short ones and go.
Wow, Miles shot a 31 to start his round. That is incredible, and appreciate the Corn Ferry for tweeting that sound out so we could share it with you. Go Miles. We'll see how far he can go, but he'll certainly be a fun player to watch as the years go on. The RBC Heritage in Hilton Head has a $20 million purse as an elevated event. JT Poston leads with an 8-under 63 today. Masters champion Scottie Scheffler, a 2-under 69.
Yeah, and I will tell you, Harbor Town's a cool event. I didn't realize it was one of the elevated events. You said it to Lee earlier. But it's a cool event. It's a great setting when you watch it on Sunday right there on the Atlantic Ocean. It's a neat thing. So that'll be fun to watch.
College basketball, Todd Golden is starting to heat up. He added another transfer player today, center Ruben Chinyelu from Washington State. The 6'11 rising sophomore averaged 4.7 points a game, 5 rebounds, 1.3 blocks per game. So Golden adds him. I'm assuming that's the hand logged in insurance.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's added Sam Alexis already to replace Tyree Samuel. So Golden will now focus on the backcourt in replacing Zion Pullen. Also got a big commitment from Alex Lloyd, who's a top 50 player, a four-star guard.
Yeah, the transfer, Chinyelu, his big game was at Arizona when they were ranked fourth. He went for 12 and 11 and was one of the dominant players there. It almost confirms to me that they don't think they're going to have him logged in for a year. Remember, Todd told us when he sat with us on Friday that, listen, it's a brutal injury for anybody, but really for a 7-1 guy, we understand that if he has to redshirt next year and comes back better than ever in 2 years, we're prepared for that. That shocked me. It just didn't dawn on me that there was a chance he wouldn't play next, and certainly he's going out and getting his insurance, which in Yalu and Alexis. It almost tells me he doesn't expect to have it. And as for the high school kid, yeah. Now, Mike White got a handful of those top 50s.
Right.
They haven't had a lot lately.
Yeah, Florida's also going to play North Carolina in the Jumpman Invitational next year, so that'll be fun.
Yeah.
When the college basketball season gets going, to see the Gators and Tar Heels match up. Getting to the NBA, the 76ers beat the Heat in the play-in game. Heat also lose Jimmy Butler, so they're now in dire straits. The Bulls beat the Hawks in the other play-in game that was the elimination game. So the Bulls move on. So good for Billy D.
Yeah, and by the way, the Heat was way up in that game.
Yeah,
the Heat was way ahead.
They're up 12 at half.
Yeah, up 12 at the half, and then the Sixers came back. Yeah, good for Billy D. I want Billy Donovan to be really successful as an NBA coach, and I hope he is. I think he's a good basketball coach. You're only as good as your players in that league, but I hope he does well. I'm glad at least for now they get to continue playing.
Yeah, looking at pop culture, Netflix reports adding 9.3 million subscribers in the first quarter. They are up to nearly 270 million subscribers.
Obviously, we are now in an arms race among the streaming services. I mean, whether you like it or not, whether old people like me like it or not, what we watch on NBC, ABC, CBS is fading fast. The world is going to be – it's going to be who wins the Netflix – Amazon Prime, Hulu, right? I mean, that's where we're headed.
Yeah.
Where we're headed, it used to be who's going to win between ABC, NBC, CBS, don't you think? I think we're headed for that. I really do. I think that's the world we're headed for.
That would be like the seventh highest populated country, by the
Isn't
way.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, 270 million people giving them that fee every month. That is
more people that live in Pakistan.
That's just, yeah.
And Brazil.
That's amazing. It's just gigantic. All right, a tribute today. Sad news. Dickie Betts of the Allman Brothers passes away at the age of 80. One of the greats, Frank.
He wrote and sang Ramblin' Man. He is the Allman Brothers, with apologies to the great, great Lynyrd Skynyrd, might be the first and most well-known Southern rock band. When Southern rock became a thing, I don't know that anybody did it better, longer, sooner than the Allman Brothers. Now, Lynyrd Skynyrd's right there, and then the Molly Hatchets and 38 Specials and others. But this is one of the most classic Southern rock songs. It's right with Freebird and Sweet Home. It's one of the most classic Southern rock songs Dickie Betts wrote. He was 80 years old. He wrote this. He sang this. He also wrote Jessica, which is the lyricless song, and he wrote it about his daughter, is what he did. So Dickie Betts will be missed. I love music, and I love the Allman Brothers, and I love this song. A sad day in the world of rock music, for sure.
That's going
to
do it.
Well done. One segment to go. We got a little giveaway. We're going to give you something, and we're going to wrap the program. Stay with us. Well done, JJ. The other song that Dickie Betts is so very well known for, Jessica, and it is just fantastic. It is a great song. No words, and you know what? It doesn't need any.
Right.
Jessica by the Allman Brothers, written by the late Dickie Betts, died today at the age of 80, the great Allman Brother member.
This is one you put on at the bar because you get like three songs worth.
Yeah.
Out of your dollar.
Absolutely. We're giving away
That's
two tickets.
That's a thinking man there.
It's a poor man.
Guns N' Hoses coming up Saturday night at UNF.
That's awesome.
How about two tickets? Think anybody wants them?
Absolutely.
Should I just throw them away or give them away? What do you think? Give them away?
I give them away.
Let's give them away. Caller 3 at 641-1010. You want to go to Guns N' Hoses? It's a lot of fun. The firemen and the policemen, they box it out in the ring. They do it at that UNF arena, and they have a big time. It's one of the cool events in town, and it does. It comes up on Saturday night. So caller 3 right now, 641-1010, and you are headed to Guns N' Hoses, and hope you have a wonderful time if you win it. And so 641-1010 is the number to call. It was fast and furious today now, man. We zipped along. It was a fast show. Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson met with the media. We played you some of those comments. Lee Smith was in. Boy, does he do a great job talking golf.
Oh, yeah.
He really, really does a good job talking Masters and other. Our Duval County Scholar Athlete was just terrific. And Sunil Joshi is her dad, who we hear from
really
a lot
cool.
on Twitter, and he should be very proud. And I know
Absolutely.
That he is.
Absolutely. Congratulations.
Yeah, Pete Prisco stopped by as well. So a lot of fun stuff coming up on the program today. We are 1 week from the draft. Hard to believe it, isn't it? We're 1 week away from the draft. It's hard to believe we are
Thank
that
goodness.
Close. Yeah, well, and that too.
Yeah, it's.
I like where they are, Hayes. I like where the football team is. I'm obviously, as much as we love the Gators and we talk about stuff we love individually, baseball, music, whatever. We're the Jaguar Station. That's what we talk about the most. That's what the most of our listeners want to hear about. And when we get excited about stuff, that's the thing that we get really excited about. I'm very excited about where I think the Jags are going to be and what they are. And I got a really good feeling. I can't wait for the draft.
I do too. And I'm really intrigued about the trade down scenario. To the extent that, you know, I'm curious if even they would trade out of the first round completely. When you look at perhaps a deal with Washington, if Washington, they're going to take quarterback at 2, obviously, but do they want to come back in at 17 and perhaps take Brian Thomas if he's available? You know, if you're the Jaguars, I think it makes sense to do that move. It would be, you'd be getting the 36th pick, and Washington also has the 40th overall pick. So two high second round choices would be enough ammunition for Washington. So if you're the Jaguars, if you get that call, I think it would make sense to move back and pick up that pick. You would have 36, 40, and 48, so three really impactful prospects to fill corner, receiver, and then possibly an offensive lineman, possibly an edge player, you know, whoever was there. Plus, you still have your late third rounder, so four total picks in the top 96. Again, this is just one contingency, but I'm more focused on possibilities of a trade down more than a trade up, particularly after hearing Trent Baalke say today, probably not even thinking trade up until they see at least the first 11 selections that are made.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it and see what happens 1 week until the draft comes up. I do want to tell people, by the way, the Gateway Conference baseball tournament is down to four teams now. The semifinals are going on right now at our Bregan Baseball Complex at Fort Family Park. Walkoff had the honor of hosting that for our friends at the DCPS. And so two games today, First Coast and Inglewood tonight, Stanton and Mandarin now, or Fletcher and Mandarin now. Not Mandarin. Anyway, I apologize. I got it wrong. But I know Inglewood and First Coast are tonight. I'm going to tell you quickly who's playing. But we invite you to go come watch baseball. We love having baseball over there. And high school baseball around here is really good now. And Hayes, you and I have had that talk.
Oh, yeah. It's incredibly deep.
The high school baseball around here is really good. So if you you want to come out and watch it. Then tomorrow night we got the championship game, which is at 6 o'clock. So come on out. We'd love to have you do it. Fletcher, Atlantic Coast are playing right now. I got that corrected. Inglewood and First Coast are playing in the nightcap. The two winners play tomorrow at 6 o'clock for the championship of the Gateway Conference. And Gateway Conference baseball is pretty good, so we hope you'll make your way out there. So I love watching some high school baseball. By the way, the Gators play at Vanderbilt tonight. I think they're going to get worked again. Yeah. It's amazing how tough this season has been for a team that was one line drive that was caught near the warning track away from winning the national title last year. Hard to believe.
You don't think they'll pull it or get it turned around at all?
I think they could sneak into the tournament. I'm not sure they're going to be in the tournament.
They're two games over 500 right now?
I think they could sneak into the tournament. But no, I sometimes what you see is real. It is what you see.
Mm-hmm.
They can't pitch. And again, the Missouri game showed they don't have timely hitting. I think it's a long way back. I mean, the league's so good.
Yeah.
They can't get on a run because everybody they play is ranked. Like every team. I mean, Georgia's ranked. Georgia hasn't been ranked in baseball, and I can't tell you when they're ranked.
Yeah, Georgia has a power hitter that's leading the nation in homers.
Best hitter in the country, probably.
Yeah.
So we'll see what winds up happening. So, JJ, give me a quick NBA update, would you please? Now the play-in's
so
over.
So we have Chicago,
over, right?
Yeah, Chicago, like you said, moves on.
There's no action tonight.
Yeah, they're gonna play the Heat, I think, on Friday or Saturday
night.
That's
Friday. Yep.
And the Heat aren't gonna have Jimmy Butler, who was kind of terrible yesterday anyway. So I think Chicago's gonna advance, and they had they were probably four or five games under 500 this year. Total opposite in the West, where there's teams that are like 10 games above 500 that are playing in the play-in. So the Lakers are already in. They're going to play the Nuggets. I think that's on Sunday.
Right.
But yeah, tonight we have a night off. So it's going to be the Kings versus
New Orleans Pelicans.
Yes, without Zion potentially.
Yeah, that's tomorrow night. That's the 9:30 game. Heat.
So I like the Kings to advance there.
Yeah, Heat and Magic are 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Heat and Bulls, my bad. Heat and Bulls are tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Sacramento and New Orleans tomorrow night at 9:30. So,
who's going to win the whole thing, JJ? Who do you think?
I think it's going to be the Nuggets again.
Yeah.
They just have the best player in the world, and I think when it comes down to it, if it is them versus Boston – the Nuggets owned Boston in the regular season. I know that doesn't really mean much when it comes down to the playoffs, but I just don't think they'll have an answer for Jokic. He's a beast. He's the best player we've seen since, LeBron, probably.
So it's a dumb question, but it's a 2-7 matchup. No chance the Lakers hang around with them, right? No chance?
Well, last year, every game they played in was very close, but I think they still got swept. So I think they could push it to 6, but anything beyond that, I think, would be shocking.
The Knicks are the 2 seed in the East. Are they good? I mean, can they?
They're good, but they're not good enough to win the East. And they also lost Randle, who was out for most of the season anyway. But that's a big loss right around now. I don't see them going much past the first round. I don't know who they'd have to play in the second round, but it's going to be a tough road to hoe for them for sure.
And the Magic, obviously, in the 4-5 matchup, the Cavs and the Magic.
They could win that.
Can they win that?
Absolutely.
Magic, beyond that, I don't know.
Well, to win, then they'd have to beat the Celtics, right? So
exactly. And their offense sucks.
Yeah. So
Magic in 5.
Yeah. Please. I'd love that.
Folks, that's our program. Don't go anywhere, though. Rick Beluga's Into the Night, and that comes up right now. We're out of here. For Hayes and JJ, I'm Frank Franzi. So long.